Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This is Don Hutchison. You're listening to The Big Interview with Graham Hunter. Hello, everybody. My name's Neil White, and from Backpage, this is The Big Interview with Graham Hunter. Every month, we do a Q&A with the questions coming from our socios at patreon.com/GrahamHunter, who also get early access to all our podcasts, extra big interviews, and other exclusive content. This is part two of our new season La Liga special, and Graham, the first question comes from, I think, a first-time participant. Socio Gavin Homechuk from, wait for it, Falkirk. Come on, you Bairns. Gavin writes, what's the general feeling with Ernesto Valverde? Is he a few bad results away from being sacked? After Anfield, how much credit does he have in the bank to get through a sticky start considering the current injuries at Barca? Graham, online certainly, I get a sense of a fickle old Barca support. What's it like in the... I do. Well, That's how it comes over.
It begins with F and it's got CK in it, but I'm not sure fickle would be the exact word.
Was it like in Barcelona and in the media there concerning a coach who, let's not forget, is going for a third successive league title?
Yeah, I'm not 100% convinced that the media is our barometer in this one. I don't disagree with you at all. But as I think Gavin is hinting at, the fan base, first of all, you said fickle. The fan base is pretty firmly divided. There is a new constituency, you know, in our lives of writing books together or recording these podcasts, which is the online community. And probably the majority of them don't visit the camp now often because they live in different countries, may not ever have visited the camp now. But they feel as passionately, as virulently as anybody who's been going there for 50 years does. And that community is noticeably, you know, by the majority, not unanimously, anti-Valverde. And I think that, again, I go back to an answer I gave yesterday where it's about this. I fell in love with a particular brand of football at this club. I want this brand of football forever and it's not here and I find Valverde culpable. All right, let's set that aside. The reason that I don't think the media is our number one barometer, although often it can be in the sacking of a Camp Nou coach, Neil, I accept that point. It's that Valverde has got something unusual. He somehow or other, I have my opinions about how, has won an affinity with the large majority of his squad. And there are a vast range of examples. This is the coach with whom Messi has got on best since the first 2 years of Pep Guardiola. Maybe it's to Valverde's great good fortune that Messi is now 32, that he's matured, that he's watched the changes that Cristiano Ronaldo accepted himself about how regularly he should play, what role rest played in being elite in spring when trophies, the big trophies are dealt out. At any rate, there's been a finding of consensus between Messi and Valverde, which has been, I think, really healthy. It hasn't won them the Champions League. You know, let's not muck about that. They were atrocious in Paris. They were atrocious in Rome. They were atrocious in Turin. And while Messi himself was, I thought, just utterly brilliant at Anfield, Liverpool weren't only clear winners, they were deserved winners over the two ties. So Valverde has a spring Champions League problem. But if you look at his decision-making, his relationship with Busquets, Pique, Alba, Stegen, Suarez, the real linchpins, the beasts of the team, who can get you the sack if they want. It's not that he kowtows to them, not at all, but I think they like and trust him. They find him to be a football man of smarts. Messi has come out after games. He's talked more and more now as captain. Messi has come out after games. One in particular stands out, but this is not a rarity. And he's taken the time to compliment the way that Valverde sets a game up. This was the one where they won so utterly fantastically at Sevilla last year, with Messi scoring two or three of the best goals of his entire career. And therefore, this president, who's very political and who's very keen on his own reputation and his own legacy, is looking at Valverde and saying a couple of things. One, he has regularly brought trophies in the door, two of them being consecutive Ligas. He has got the squad very much, they've got his back. And finally, and I think this is really important, who else right now? Who else? Who would be, and you know, there's an opportunity cost. If Bartomeu were either to have thought after Anfield of sacking him, and instead he gave him a new contract, which is only a year extension, and it was only a year extension until... I mean, that's... Sorry, Neil. That maybe... I'm sorry, Gavin, too. Maybe this sounds higgledy-piggledy. But I kind of took it that this was established, that Valverde took the longer to think about whether he was staying on in late spring 2019 than Bartomeu took to think about whether he wanted Valverde to stay or not. And Valverde definitely lined up in his head, am I exhausted? Do I have the capacity to vault this March, April, May obstacle in Europe or not? Are the players with me? I think the core thing I come back to is he asked himself, did he have the energy? And what I would say to you, Gavin, is that undoubtedly Valverde wanted to... The thermometer he was using was to say, am I drained to a point at which I can't do another season? So don't anybody think that Bartomeu was going, well, it's just one more season because we know that I'm just going to use this year to find another coach and you're definitely out. It was largely about Valverde's wish to stay on and belief in whether he had the energy to stay on or not. So right now, if there were 3, 4, 5 really poor results on the bounce, would Valverde be absolutely the Teflon Don? No. Completely immune? No. But I think that Bartomeu has pretty much manacled himself to this coach until the end of the season. Xavi has made it absolutely clear, and he's playing right now. He's won a trophy with Al Sadd. He's in the quarterfinals of the Cup with Al Sadd. He took his team over to deepest, darkest Catalonia for the preseason training and said, you know, I'm at this for a few years to come until I believe I'm ready. So Xavi, I don't think, is the solution. I don't think he wants to come charging in right now. There are repatriations in that Victor Valdes is now in charge of the juvenil side. There are motions to bring Carlos Puyol back into the fold. There are other ex-players, I guess, but I don't think that there's a... You know, Ronald Koeman, who's currently the Netherlands manager, has always wanted to coach Barcelona and probably would drop the national team for Barca if he were offered it right now. But is he the right man? I'm unsure. And Bartomeu knows that there are elections coming in 2021 that I don't think he's going to stand in. And therefore, I'm not certain how he can be tempting somebody he thought was the absolute number one coach for Barcelona anywhere in the world and be saying to him, well, as president, I'll be out in 2021. So if you take the job in 2020, you might only get a year. I think it's a real Chinese puzzle of a dilemma that's in front of Bartomeu right now. And for that reason, unless there are disasters, I think Valverde is relatively safe. But it's for, Gavin, it's for a patchwork of reasons. The dearth of who to appoint if you were to sack him. The fact that the president retains faith in Valverde as an operator, as a man. And Valverde, one-on-one, is a very, very impressive, sound character. People like him. People like to trust him. He's intensely hardworking, and that has reflected on his relationship with the majority of his players. And therefore, while the football was extremely patchy in the dead end of last season at Anfield, in the home leg against Liverpool, it wasn't a 3-0 win for Barcelona, although the history books will always say so, in the cup final against Valencia, there was exhaustion. And I think, Gavin, to finalise now, we need to read into the substitution, the last substitution made at San Mamés, where Carlos Perez is brought in. Okay, he scored in the pre-season. Very good. That's excellent. But when Carlos Perez was brought on at San Mamés, if memory serves me, Busquets is left on the bench. There's another senior player left on the bench. I should be able to tell you immediately who it was. But there were choices that he ignored. when Carlos Perez starts against Betis and Ansu is brought on as the final substitute, Rakitic is left on the bench. Artur is left on the bench. Again, there's one other left on the bench who's crying out for match practice. And Valverde makes a statement about, I'm doing things my way. I almost feel right now he's a coach liberated to say, I've learned a little bit from the last two seasons in spring, and I'm going to make decisions differently from now on. They may be right, they may be wrong, but he strikes me as a coach who's going, I'm going all in, I'm going to stand or fall on my own principles this last season.
Okay, thank you for playing, Gavin. I hope you enjoyed Graham's answer to your question there. Next up is Rehman Mohammed, who, it's a quick one, I think. He's asked for an update on Jack Harper. His question is actually, is this finally going to be Jack Harper's breakthrough season, which is possibly a more complicated question than it sounds like. I think it is worthwhile for listeners who haven't been following Jack's career closely to give a brief background there. So I'll just say that Jack's a 23-year-old Scot who had a very colourful sort of youth career, which involved the academy of Real Madrid and then Brighton. He's since played for Malaga. He was signed this summer by Getafe, but Graham, he's going to be playing Segunda football this season.
Yes, he is. And first of all, Rehman, thank you for the question. It's a subject that fascinates me, and it's a subject that I wish I could spend more time on generally, in that I'd like to be watching more of Alcorcon, who have taken Jack on loan from Getafe. And I think that the initial thing when we saw him moving from Malaga to Getafe, in terms of development, we thought this is exciting. Number one, because Malaga are in a terrible mess. They haven't got all their players registered. The owner has done interviews in the press talking about how much money he's lost at the club. But still, I think most people who follow Malaga and care for the club think that it's got gigantic organisational and financial problems. And therefore, they're also, although in an ideal world, they've got an opportunity to go up this season, having lost in the playoffs last season. And having scored an away win and a home draw, a late penalty against Las Palmas at the weekend, where Ruben Castro, that 38-year-old veteran, what is it with Spain, 38-year-old goal scorers? Where we've suddenly got Adarith and Mata and Ruben Castro and a whole number of players finding love in the Indian summer of their career. Malaga looked like a place for Jack to be getting out of, whereas Getafe is hugely well run from their not too attractive president, whose views I don't often find myself enjoying, to Bordalas, their intense, clever, nationalistic coach, who brought them to the verge of the Champions League last season. And you'd have thought that while Jack might not have been an automatic starter, it was a club where you'd imagine he'd develop. You'd imagine that he would find the competition around him, the footballers around him, particularly those who either are creative or are out-and-out strikers. I'd have thought it would have been an environment in which he would flourish. They see him as a project for perhaps when they lose one of their bigger players during the season, because clubs will come looking to pick these footballers off. A player who might come to them in a year's time when he spent the season with Alcorcon. Jack made a very auspicious debut away to Numancia, who are, I think, an organised and difficult club to beat. And he produced an assist for the winner from Dani Romera, and it looked like the perfect start. He comes off. I think he picked up an injury. He doesn't play against Elche, and therefore we're a little bit stunted, Rehman, in knowing exactly how he's going to fit in there. I don't have oodles of time to be watching Alcorcon, and therefore over the coming weeks and months, I'll make a point of doing that to see how Jack is playing. I'll try to speak to him. But I was a little bit, I must say, a little bit disappointed that he wasn't maintained at Getafe, even if he had to fight for a place in the first team, rather than being loaned out. They have a strategy. They're a very clever, organised club. Therefore, I'm certain it won't have been whim that he's loaned out. There'll be an idea behind it. And partly because he's Scottish, but partly because although he might consider himself 50-50, having spent so long growing up at Fuengirola, and then in Real Madrid Castilla, La Fabrica, the factory, he may consider himself 50-50 Scottish-Spanish. There's very little question that we consider him Scottish. And it'd be lovely to see a player of his ability and given the position that he plays in, developing strongly enough to be reconsidered for Scottish national selection at a time when we are reaching out for that type of talent. Let's see whether Alcorcón is the right place for him to do that, to make that leap or not. And Rahman, I wouldn't want to paint you a sketch that I wouldn't be confident of whether Fran, his coach, and Alcorcón as a squad is definitely the right place for Jack. First foot was good, 3 points the week before last, absent completely from the squad this past weekend. Fingers crossed that it's a staging post for him, and that maybe at Christmas time, having done so well at Alcorcón, he's called back by Bordalas into the Primera and into Europa League with Getafe.
Okay, time for a break. Back before you know it, more questions from our socios.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Okay, we're back. Graham, you just talked about Jack Harper. Our regular inquisitor, Athan Sokolas, is also on a similar theme. He's asking, are there any other young players you're looking at this year? So let's take Jack off the table. Let's take João Félix off the table, as we covered him in part one of this podcast. You know, who else do you like? Is there like two or three young players that you've particularly got your eye on this season?
The quick answer is obviously yes, but there is a footballer that David Moyes gave his debut to, who I think now is pretty well known, but is still only 22. And given how many times on this podcast we've had the privilege of speaking to Athan, he's never actually confirmed to me which he prefers. It's a very, very beautiful name. There is no question about that. I'd swap. But Athan, you will know, given how often you are in contact with us, you will know about Mikel Oyarzabal. And if you've had the misfortune to listen to me co-commentating on La Liga television, then you'll be absolutely clear what I think about him. I'm startled by his development. He's called Bigfoot, I think, because he wears about size 14 or 15 shoes. He's not a local lad as such, in that he was born and brought up in Eibar. All his friends and family are season ticket holders at Eibar. But Oyarzabal is, to my way of thinking, he makes a heart skip. Whether he's a runner off a main striker, whether he's the main striker, whether he's wide on either side, whether he's playing in a counter-attack, or whether he's sitting high against a team and trying to produce shots of power from outside the box, I think that his library of skills is wider than his equivalent, let's call it, across the divide. I'm going to be there on Friday night when Athletic host La Real in the Basque Derby at San Mames. And of course, I'm talking about his equivalent being Iñaki Williams. And I think Oyarzabal probably has more of a game. And at 22, he's younger, but he's holding responsibility on his shoulders. And I adore watching him. I've got just the absolute highest hopes for him. Another in that team, and I'm gonna skip over Martin Ødegaard, who I acknowledge everybody is getting ultra excited about now. The guy who on the European circuit was coming through nose and nose with Christian Pulisic from, let's be honest, from 5 years ago, when international representational teams were playing under 16 football, when sort of Meridian Cups or the Nike Cup or the Cyprus Cup or little tournaments that we know less about were being played, the continent was abuzz about Odegaard against Pulisic. Because Odegaard's dad was noisier and pushier, it was Odegaard, despite the fact that Pulisic was probably dominating the tournaments more, was more of a mature leading footballer, and they're almost identical in profile and age. Odegaard's profile got hugely inflated and he got a Real Madrid move at a time when he wasn't ready for it. I mean, even Pulisic, I think, needed time to establish himself at Dortmund in a club that was supportive, that was well coached, and with a fan base that was not only noisy but loyal and patient, which, you know, poor old Odegaard didn't have that at Real Madrid, or subsequently when he's been loaned out across half of Europe. Now, after an extremely good season, I think everybody knew that Vitesse had been a good club for him, that the Dutch league had been the right place for him, and that he began to shine. Odegaard has hit the ground running at La Real, and maybe he'll convert himself into one of the players that in a couple of months I'll be saying to you, yeah, and that's definitely Odegaard. Instead, there are two more in this same squad that I think, well, I honestly think are worth talking about. One is Mikel Merino in midfield, who had an underwhelming time at Borussia Dortmund, showed much more at Newcastle United. I think anybody who went to St James to watch Merino said, all right, he's clearly not come to the boil yet, but boy, there'll be flavours in that cup. And he's delicate in terms of his wit, in terms of what he'll do with the ball, his balance on the ball, to show you one way and go the other. He's lovely. He's very clever about link passing. I think he's one of these footballers that can either help the transition come from the breakdown and then a very rapid transition up front, or when you're trying to pass your way through quite an organised defence, Merino has both those lock-picking skills. And I think that we're going to really enjoy watching him on the ball. And it excites me that all of this is happening at a time when the La Real Cantera youth system has been productive and well organised for long enough that the first team is now chock full of product, and the La Real senior junior team, La Real B if you want, is coached by Xavi Alonso. So it doesn't mean that he's automatically going to come in, wave his magic wand and say, I bless you with all the skills and experience I've got. But I believe he's going to be a good coach, not based on how he played alone, but on what kind of man he is. Serious about football, very bright. I think he's going to be a good communicator, a good teacher. And therefore, the flow of pupils over the next couple of seasons, I genuinely hope, will continue. But in the meantime, we've already got a footballer up front in Ander Barrenechea. I think he's an 18-year-old, at best, maybe 17. Played representational football for Spain this summer all the way up to a victorious final. We're also talking about, you know, footballers. There's one more I want to go to, because right across the division, there are players who hugely excite me. I'd love to say that Ethan will have seen Carlos Soler player often enough that it'll surprise nobody that I've pinpointed him and Ferran Torres at Valencia. But Soler's now out for a considerable time, 6-7 weeks at minimum. Ferran Torres, again, representational European champion this summer. Fabulous, absolutely fabulous footballer. But one that people might know a little bit less about, who, you know, I'm a bit sort of transfixed by, I would have to admit, is a kid going across the Basque divide again and into the Athletic Cantera, is a kid who's called Ian Sunset, and that's pronounced the best I can manage. So for anybody who doesn't know about this kid, Sunset is spelled S-A-N-C-E-T, and Ian is a Basque name. And we lost a kid who I was hugely, hugely excited about, and Lauren, who went from Real Betis to Napoli, played for Ancelotti, and last season, even at a young age, a Spaniard moving to the heat of Serie A, heat in terms of intensity, smarts, the meanness of Serie A, and stood out, literally stood out, played utterly brilliantly for Spain under 21s as they won the European Championships this season. And yet, lo and behold, this kid, Sunset, seems to me to have all the time and space in central midfield that Lauren had. It's amazing to see what looks like a carbon copy of one kid coming through. He's 19. He's obviously, given athletics policy, born and bred there. And he's got little bits of João Félix in terms of, if he's tight in a space, he's got a trick and a flick that gets him out of that log jam and away again. But what he wants to do is to be given the ball on the half turn and to show that the 2-3 moves ahead that he's got, that he can use the ball to match the pictures that he's got in his head. And therefore, if his development continues the way that it's been going so far, and given that he's got a coach in Garitano at Athletic who trusts him and who will use him and who brought him on to make him part of the win over Football Club Barcelona to massive fanfare. I mean, the fans were absolutely beside themselves. I think he picked up a minor muscle strain that day, and therefore, whether we see him in the Basque Derby this week or not, I'd love to, but I don't really care, because these are the guys. It's coincidence, and I could go to other footballers, Brian Gil down at Sevilla, Ansu. All I knew of Ansu, who came on for Barcelona with about 9 or 10 minutes left against Betis, all I knew was that he was still young at juvenile basis. So that's a couple of teams underneath the first team. And that, like Xavi Simons, who went away to Paris Saint-Germain, his contract was coming up. There were clubs all over the elite leagues, particularly led by Manchester United, who wanted to take Ansu Fati away from Barcelona, because although he's still small, age just 16, the word is that he is a genuine phenomenon. And that his decision-making, his pace, his goal-scoring, his cojones make him elite. Having watched Dongao come through under Oscar Garcia in the youth league, and having thought that I'd rarely seen a striker like that at age 16, I have to be careful, because Dongao's promise spluttered and died. And he's now, I don't know, he was at Zaragoza last I looked, and then he's moved on from there again. I know that where Dongao, who I had so much fun watching and hope, so much hopes for, has gone. I couldn't actually tell you right now, which is a bit of a shame. But Ansu, when he came on, one thing I noticed was that whether he's a brilliant goal scorer or not, he's been trained such that his football brain, his decision making for a 16-year-old on his debut at the Camp Nou, his decision making was sparkling. Absolutely sparkling. You could imagine a 16-year-old coming along going, I'll show what I'm good at. I'll run at somebody. Or if I get the ball, I'll produce a brilliant finish. But he did everything right. And he just showed that his brain is good. It isn't just, say, pace or some innate talent. So there's a handful of people who, to my mind, and I could go on and on and on, but there's a handful of footballers who'll be catching my eye, who I'll be following very closely.
According to the internet, Jean-Marie Dongao is currently clubless. He is he's a free agent.
Oh, bloody hell.
At the age of 24.
Well, that ain't right. That ain't right. I'll tell you something. Anybody in the Celtic staff who saw what Dongao did to them in the youth league would be saying, he's not particularly tall, and you know, we're well blessed for strikers, but let's take a punt on that guy. There was a time, and it wasn't just my opinion, I remember speaking to Oscar Garcia about Dongao, and he said, look, the sky's the limit. He can be anything he wants to in football, because his pace and his talent and his what he's got, you know, for those who never saw Jimmy Greaves, I really only saw Jimmy Greaves on tape, despite being old enough to have seen him in some Match of the Day games. But when Messi started scoring slide at home goals, where he just goes, I see a space and I'm just going to snooker shot that into the corner. It doesn't need power, it just needs placement. That Dongao had that certainly he could shoot on the run, he could put power into things, he could fire off a snapshot, but he seemed to finish in a way where a 6-foot gap looked like a 26-foot gap to him, and he just went, I'll just put it there. Which is the thing keepers hate most, because there's very little pullback of the leg, they get a little time to set themselves, all these kind of things. And yeah, Dongao had that. Now, after Barca B and some Barca first teams, whether he misbehaved, whether his head wasn't fixed right, whether injuries have stripped him of something, I don't know. At Zaragoza, he was regular, but without scoring many goals. Boy, oh boy, what a loss to... Neil, when we go around and we talk to these footballers as part of the big interview, and when each of you have done your interviews, what is it, 100 times that an elite player has said to us, yeah, there was this kid who was better than me? and now he's nowhere. So Dungar fits into a very large family when great footballers tell us, no, there was many better than me when I was young, and they just, for one reason or another, don't make it. I hope Jean-Marie Dungar doesn't become one of those. And for the moment, Ansu Fati is at the other end of that pendulum. Things are about to swing his way. It was huge fun to see him come on, and it was huge fun to see Valverde taking that risk and saying, I don't really care that Artur and whoever else is left on the bench, Raki for another, but this is the guy I'm putting my faith in.
Okay, let's wrap up with a question from our sponsors at Bet365, who would like to know who you see challenging this season for that sort of final top four position, if we assume that it's Barcelona, Real Madrid and Atletico Madrid in some order. So I was wanting you to break it down for us and then maybe make a pick. If we talk about Valencia, Sevilla and even maybe Getafe repeating their sort of run from last season.
This is where it's good to have a mouth the size of the Mersey Tunnel, because I get to boast. But it's first of all, hello to the world's favourite online betting company, our sponsors, Bet365. Thank you for supporting us. At this stage last year, if you remember, somebody said, who will be the breakthrough team? Who will be the surprise team? And I said, Espanyol. And they were. And they made Europe for the first time in a decade. And as we speak, not by the time this goes out, but as we speak, they're 3-0 up in the first leg of their 3-1 up, pardon me, of the first leg of the Europa League. So I hope they're a Europa League qualified team by the time you listen to this. At any rate, I don't know. I think that there is a fighting chance that Atleti win the title. Not odds on, not. I think that it's a two-way fight. I don't think Real Madrid are title material. I think it's Atleti Barca for the title. And I can see a situation in which Atleti win. It largely depends on, do they get Rodrigo from Valencia, which they're trying to do? Does Diego Costa stay fit? Other than that, I think that their squad is pretty well equipped. Football Club Barcelona's travails we've talked about enough. Real Madrid's travails we've talked about enough. Team four, everybody says Sevilla. Again, I have my doubts. Sevilla are constructed to play Champions League football and to reach fourth as a minimum because Monchi's come back. That brilliant talent spotter has come back from Roma and brought in sufficient new signings, a whole raft of them. I think when on day one of the season, there was about 7 or 8 new footballers in their team. I'm yet to be wholly convinced by them. It's only week two, but I look at Sevilla under Julen Lopetegui, ex-under-21 coach, ex-Real Madrid, ex-Porto coach, ex-national team coach, sacked because of the mad way he handled a job offer from Real Madrid, sacked before the first game of the Russian World Cup. There's lots to like about him, but I think they've got a team now in Sevilla who, although they've won twice and sit top of the division, have replaced a lot of craft and wit and technique with a lot of height and power, and I'm unconvinced that the Nerion is going to fall in love with that team. If they keep winning, then obviously people will come blind to the beauty spots and the blemishes. But I worry about whether De Jong, Luke, not Frankie, is going to provide them enough goals. It needs to be a big season for Munir. Nolito needs to keep chipping in here and there. I'm unsure about Sevilla, and I say that first because everybody else around the country, ex-players, coaches, pundits, when asked to predict the top four, 90% of people put Sevilla fourth. They said that because it's been a really troubled summer at Valencia with the managing director nearly quitting, Mateo Alemán, with the threat that might take his favoured son, Marcelino, plus the football director, who they both wanted appointed and who's in post right now. There were real dangers of the whole relationship from ownership down to executives and manager, that breaking down. There was an emergency meeting called. Peter Lim managed to convince the executive team and the management team to stay, but Rodrigo being sold is something that nobody who's working at the club, rather than owning the club, wants to happen. It's part of their corporate plan that every season they must sell a big talent. It's on record to cut into their debt. They said, we want to qualify for the Champions League every season, and every season we have to sell at least one of the players who got us there. Now, that is a vicious, vicious cycle for a coach to deal with. And Valencia haven't started brilliantly. Don't look right. Rodrigo was rested or left out in their defeat at Balaidos this weekend. Marcelino said, well, it wasn't because he asked to be left out and it wasn't because the owners told me I couldn't pick him. But he would say that, wouldn't he? From Monday onwards, when the transfer market ends, we'll be able to understand differently whether Valencia can click. Because if they click and Rodrigo stays, it's my opinion that Valencia can finish fourth again. They don't look anything like it right now, but they can. Getafe, I don't see finishing fourth. If there's an outsider, then maybe it's La Real. They haven't started fantastically, but their squad is superb. Their coach is somebody that they understand. Athletic Bilbao maybe are almost as blessed in the relationship between squad and coach. They don't have as many goals. So my outside, and I mean outside tip for fourth, is La Real. And my slight dark horse is Valencia, but the nation says Sevilla. I'd love it to see a Champions League football coming back to the Anoeta, and maybe that's where I'm going to rest. Viva La Real.
Thanks for listening. This is a Backpage production with Graham Hunter. Our music is by Beer Jacket. If you like it, please tell someone else who might like it too.